D'Angelo lost the puck. Johansson for Nashville. Getting out of the corner. Pete Subban for a drive. Score!
Kenny, we just talked about a lack of forecheck by St. Louis. This is Exhibit A. I mean, this goal comes from almost 200 feet away when it starts. There's no forecheck pressure. PK Subban with his second point of the game.
Subban fires, save, and then it's knocked in. A power play goal. 3-1 Nashville.
Subban, look at the emotion. That's what you're talking about when you get a player like this. What a play he made at the offensive blue line.
On the third goal, when Phil is in front of the net battling, and I mean, that's a skilled player. That's one of the top five skilled players in the league, and Forsberg, and he's in there getting dirty and getting his nose dirty. So we got to continue that if we want to have success.
Here come the Blues. Sobotka with a shot. He scores!
These guys haven't quit, and there's been no negativity at all. Excellent puck support down low. And then Vladdy Sobotka is going to jump in, take the pass, and just snap that by Pekka-Rinne hard.
3 points for PK Subban tonight. Puck sent towards the net. They score!
PK Subban coming out of his own zone. Little chip pass. And right here, there's a battle engaged with Jay Bouwmeester and the Nashville Predators. And Jay Bouwmeester loses. And then the little swing by Fiddler going hard to the net. Austin Watson gets the puck to the net. And then that little reach in by Vernon Fiddler gives Nashville a one-goal lead.
You get better looking every day. I mean, Jesus, Pierre, what are you doing? What's the secret?
Go to the gym like you.
I like it. I like it.
As you might have heard, at least a couple of guys had a lot of fun last night in St. Louis. Welcome back. Hour number three, Melnick in the afternoon, TSN 690 with Mitch Gallo. Dave Trenadue is here, sitting in for Rod Francis, who shall return. Dustin Kagan Fleming is helping us out. Tonight, Pierre finds himself in Washington for the opening of round two Eastern Conference.
Pierre McGuire, brought to you by Dagwoods, now open in Laval on Saint-Marte and Daniel Johnson. Bring Dagwoods' unique taste to your neighborhood. Visit dagwoods.ca for franchising information.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How are you?
Excellent, Mitch. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Well, that was something. That was something by PK Subban, huh? That was like an exclamation point. Round two, here we come.
That defense is just so good, and he's found the perfect partner in Matthias Ekholm. That partnership works just so darn well. And then you have Ryan Ellis and Roman Josi. I think the thing that blew me away, for those that didn't watch the game, I'm sure they heard about it, the horrific injury to Kevin Fiala and how that really bonded their group. I mean, they were in a good spot going into the injury, but coming out of it, they really came together. I'm not saying it's going to be a swing moment in the series, but you could sense something was going on around their group. I went onto their bench not long after that injury, and there was a camaraderie there that I had not seen during their Chicago series, I can tell you that.
Fiala, oh boy. Take it down by Bortuzzo.
He went in really awkwardly. He's in trouble. He's really in trouble here.
He does a spread eagle when he goes in. And the way he goes in, his legs, this is not good at all. It's a hard play by Bortuzzo. Watch his legs awkwardly separate there. And then you see him go crunching in. This is not going to be good, Kenny.
And the game eventually was held up for, what, 20 minutes, Pierre? And they had to get another ambulance in as the ambulance on site had to take him to the hospital. You reacted immediately, as anybody at ice level must have, right? The same way that this was kind of horrific, actually.
Yeah, no, it wasn't good. It was, I feel so bad. He's a 20-year-old young man. It's a broken femur. He needed major surgery on it. I spoke with David Poile last night and again today, this morning, the general manager and the president of the Predators. It's just not good. I feel terrible for the player. And you know what? It's one of those things where people say, oh, you know, that was dirty. No, it wasn't. It was a hockey play that unfortunately went a little bit wrong because Fiala, just his legs just separated and he lost his edge, and that's when the trouble started.
That is the longest and strongest bone in the body. But, you know, we just chatted with Ray Ferraro, and he was just leaving a rehab assignment that Landon is going through to Trey. He's got a torn ACL. He said he's got 6 months of rehab ahead of him. He believes that for the kid, it'll be at least a year.
I coached a player by the name of Bruce Gardner in Ottawa, and Bruce was a very good player out of Colgate University, and we were playing an exhibition game, believe it or not, up in Sudbury against the Washington Capitals, and he, believe it or not, got a compound fracture of his femur, and eventually came back and played. He played for Ottawa, and he played for Tampa, but he came back and played. He didn't have nearly the career he probably should have, and I think a big reason why was that injury. Medical science is obviously better than it was, you know, 17, 18 years ago, 19 years ago now maybe, but this is still, it's going to be interesting to see how Fiala does, because he's not an overly large man, and quickness is a big part of what he does, so we'll see how it all plays out.
Pierre, what would you say to so many Montreal fans? You could guess what the reaction has been since the end of the game last night through today. With PK basically being the best player on the ice last night, following on the heels of an elimination by the Habs to the Rangers without being able to score. Like, what would you say to them in this regard at this moment? Is there anything you could say to make them feel better?
No. No. I didn't. I'll go back if you want. Rod's not there today. Dave's working. But you can go back to the day the deal was made. And I never once ever put a bad light on Shea Weber, because you can't. You'd be idiotic to do that. He's a tremendous player, and he's a really good leader. But his better days are not in front of him. They're behind. And I said the one thing the Canadiens gave up when the deal was done was the 4 years of age difference.
Yep.
And the potential still for PK to grow his brand. And the potential for Shea is not going to be there to grow his brand as much. That's not a knock on him. That's the reality of father time when you've played as much and as hard and as robust as Shea has played. Shea's a tremendous player. He is. But if you were to ask me when the deal went down, and I think I said it to you, I don't know the exact words, but long term, this is not going to be a good deal for Montreal.
No, that's a win now mode team that got eliminated in the first round. That's the harsh reality of the situation.
And yeah, again, that's why I can't comfort anybody. I feel terrible saying that. Shea Weber's a friend. I mean, I remember as a kid that wasn't even drafted.
If you're a hockey fan, you don't like Shea Weber. I don't understand how you would call yourself a hockey fan. But that's a whole other issue. So let's assume the worst of everything that's been thrown PK Subban's way, okay? Since last season, yep, when it became obvious to some of us that they were getting ready to trade him based on the information that was coming out. Let's assume 100% of that garbage is accurate. When you have a talent like that, isn't it incumbent on the organization to work it out? And if not, make sure that you get a similar player returns at some point if you decide to move on from him?
Yeah, it's hard to find guys that have won the Norris Trophy, and that's one of the things that PK had accomplished. So it's hard to find a compensation-type player that would probably fit, you know, the equation that you've presented for me. But the number one thing that you said there, Mitch, that's so, I think, intelligent, is that you always try to find a way, I think, to overcome any adversity. You always try to overcome problems internally by fixing them. The best general managers and the best management people in the league, they're amazing problem solvers. Steve Yzerman is Exhibit A. What he did on the Stamkos negotiation is marvelous. That is being a problem solver. It's an amazing thing. You know, you can go around the league and probably pinprick one thing that every manager did that was really good for their team in terms of problem solving. But that's just one highly exposed one. I don't know how the Subban thing was handled internally in Montreal. I really don't. I know he's no longer in Montreal.
That's right, and it's hard to get past it this spring if this continues, which we'll get to in a second. But let's assume during the exit interviews, Mark Bergeron was told by, let's assume that, okay? He was told by other members of the team, this team would be better if you moved him because we can't take him. What does a manager do in that regard?
Well, I think you have to sit down with your leadership core. He was one of the alternate captains, and you have to figure out, it's almost like having an intervention. You have to ask the hard tough questions, and hopefully you're going to get hard, tough, and realistic answers. You don't open it up to a broad spectrum of players either, because if you do, that's not your leadership core. That's your team. It's completely different. So I think you really have to pay attention to those things.
Yeah, I think his mind was already made
up. It's not easy. It's not easy to do this stuff, especially on the radio with you, but I would tell you that, just so the fans have an idea, you've got to make sure that you trust people internally with your group, and you got to go to those people, and hopefully they're going to tell you straight-up answers. And if they don't, this whole thing to me, I don't know how it manifested itself in Montreal with Subban, but something happened. I don't know what it was, because nobody's told me, but something happened for this to have gone the way it went. Something happened. I just don't know what it was.
Yeah, and again, as I said at the time, I think his mind had already been made up that he was going to move. He didn't need any exit interviews or conversations with anybody except maybe to confirm what he was already feeling.
I'll tell you this, Mitch. I mean, I know for a fact because I was in touch with him when he was over in Europe when the trade was announced. He was watching soccer over there, and I was in touch with him. And he was excited about the opportunity to go to Nashville, a fresh start, and to be coached by Phil Housley. I know that. He mentioned that to me. And Phil was, and I know I brought it up on your show, Phil is probably the highest profile guy that's ever coached PK. But he also was heartbroken. He loved Montreal. I think there's a spot in his heart that still loves it.
Oh, of course. And there's a lot of, whether it's intended or not, no matter what he says, what he said and how he said it after the game last night, we're all looking for signs. Is that a shot? Is that a shot at Pacioretty? Is that a shot at the Habs? Is that a shot at the coaching staff?
I interviewed
staff? Him. I'm going to run that. No, but I'm not talking about your conversation. I'm talking about when he met members of the media in the scrum afterwards.
Okay, gotcha,
yeah,
okay.
There's a few items in there that could be perceived as shots across the bow. That's for sure.
Okay, yeah. I gotcha.
So now how does St. Louis respond to this now that they've seen it firsthand?
Well, I think we talked about it yesterday. It's going to be a nasty series, and it's just going to continue to evolve and get more nasty as we go along. They're going to have to get their jumbos out. They're going to have to do some hitting, and they're going to have to do it without taking penalties. That's going to be really important for them. But I think the number one thing for St. Louis is they can't let Pekka Rinne decide the outcome of the game by handling pucks and breaking down the St. Louis forecheck. I built a tape pack last night. They could never sustain a forecheck because they would shoot the puck in, Pekka would go get it, and break down the forecheck, and they would be one and done. There would be no shots on goal, at least no high-caliber shots on goal, because they couldn't sustain a forecheck. I just talked to Mitch Korn, who was Pekka Rinne's goalie coach in Nashville before he came here to work with Holtby, and before that he worked with Hasek up in Buffalo. And he said if they let him handle a puck, and he watched the game last night, he goes, that tape you built on him was good. If they let him handle a puck, advantage Nashville. So they're going to have to figure out a way not to let him handle a puck.
Pierre McGuire is in Washington. Eric Edholm ahead of the NFL draft in Philadelphia tonight, which we have live for you on TSN in about 15 minutes. If you'd like to send Eric a question about the draft tonight, you can text him at 11690, 11690. Mitch Gallo.
So, Pierre, I'm watching that Nashville game, and obviously there's the PK story that we just spoke about. But watching that game, I'm thinking a lot about the Montreal Canadiens since they were knocked off last week by the Rangers. So I got two connections with Nashville that I want to ask you about, okay? First, I'm watching Ryan Johansson. And I'm thinking about the way Nashville acquired him. Do you think the Canadiens would be able to do a similar thing the way Nashville got Johansson with one of their young defensemen? I mean, Juulsen would be the one that, you know, fans might be more willing to give up. But if they want the true number one, would you give up Sergachev?
Tell me the name of the player.
Well,
tell
you know
me
what?
The name of the player that you're going to get, because then I'm going to be able to give you a better answer.
Okay.
I mean, go ahead.
Well, you obviously know I'm watching the Toronto situation closely.
Yeah.
And Toronto has an abundance of forwards, and they need defense. And Nylander, Babcock said the other day that Nylander is still going to be on the wing next year.
Yeah.
So what about a Nylander-Sergachev deal? Two young players.
So just remember that you're making a deal in the division. Just remember that. It makes it a little bit more complicated. I don't know why that couldn't be realistically done. It makes a lot of sense. But I also know that I think Toronto might try to build through free agency because they've got this window now with all these kids on entry level where they might be able to do some significant damage through free agency. That's the thing to watch. So I don't know if they're ready to get rid of
Gallo. Is
core.
Not he's relentless. He's not giving up. He wanted Sergachev for Duchesne, and now he's moved on to Sergachev for Nylander.
You got to give something to get something. The other name I thought about. He hasn't played much in the NHL yet. But if you could work out a deal with Arizona for Dylan Strome,
I wouldn't do that.
You want to expand?
Personally, I would not.
Because
I would like more of a complete player.
There you go.
We're going to make that deal.
Yeah. See, you got to have a senior scout before you finalize these calls, Gallo. You got to lean on, you know, some sage advice from somebody who's been around a few rinks across this planet.
I haven't seen Strome other than the World Juniors last year, to be honest. But
and what is his strength? What is his strength? You know what it is, and if you don't want to answer, I'll answer for you. His strength is scoring on the power play.
Yeah.
His strength is scoring in odd man situations. So what about the rest of the game? I think you have a player like that in Montreal already. It was a third overall pick. They don't want to play at center.
Well, and that's why I'm to something you said earlier about organizations, management staff, and coaching staffs, when they're presented with what can be seen as some kind of problem, it's their job to work it out, right? The last thing you want to do when you have a talent like Subban is trade him. But they had made up their minds that they were going to trade him. And Claude Julien, when he came in, he said, I fix things, right? So that's why a lot of us would like to see Alex Galchenyuk under Claude Julien for a full year. And see what
I'm with
happens.
That.
And see what
My
happens.
Hands up. I volunteer to watch that because I think he's more valuable with you than away from you. His value on the trade market has really, it's not fallen apart, but it is not as high as it once was. So I would prefer him to stay there and them trying to figure this out with him, mano a mano. Now, again, I wasn't part of their end of the year meeting, so I couldn't tell you what the exit interview presented, but I have a pretty good idea that they probably wanted to get some firm answers on certain situations, and if they didn't get those answers, then who knows what's going to happen.
And the other thing I want to ask you about when I was watching the game that just crossed my mind, and I don't know the answer, that's why I'm asking you. I'm watching Victor Arvidsson, and I'm wondering, do you think Arturi Lehkonen can be that good eventually?
He can, because he's got an engine just like Arvidsson. That is a great question and an awesome comparable. I really mean that. Now, the one difference is Arvidsson's playing with Philip Forsberg and with Ryan Johansson. So the one thing that needs to be engaged by Arvidsson all the time is the engine, and it is, because the other guys are just so darn strong on their sticks and make things happen out of nothing. I showed the tape of that before the game last night, just how imposing that line is, because they make something out of nothing. They don't need a lot of chances to score. You give them four chances, they're going to score three times out of the four. I mean, that's just the way that line works. So, that's a very good comparable. Very, very good.
All right. How impressive was that win by the Oilers after they lost that 3-1 lead last night in Anaheim?
No, that's a huge win for them. Anaheim's not used to doing that. The fact that they were able to do it without McDavid getting any points is gigantic for them. Adam Larson, you know how many years I've been telling you about how good he is, Mitch. And New Jersey had to trade him because they needed Taylor Hall. That was the only way they were doing that deal. New Jersey's trying to change the way they play, and Edmonton's trying to change the way they play. So it kind of fit. There was a fit there. But I know for a fact Ray Sherrill was not in a rush to trade Adam Larson, but he also needed Taylor Hall, so that's why that deal went down. But Adam was really, really good last night.
All right, so here we go. The Washington Capitals, again, will try, unfortunately for them, they have to get by the defending Stanley Cup champs to finally get out of the second round. What ultimately are the key matchups here?
Center versus center. Four centers for Washington. Backstrom, Kuznetsov, Eller, and Beagle going against Crosby, Malkin, Bonino, and Cullen. That's going to be what I'm going to really be paying a lot of attention to, the center on center. Ability to defend against the rush, that's something I'm really going to be watching because no Carl Alzner, that changes the dynamic a little bit for Washington. Now, that's not to say Carl won't be back in this series, because I think he will be at some point. Naismith's been a competent fill-in, but he's not Carl Alzner, so it'll be interesting to watch there. But that's a big thing here in Game 1. And then I think the other thing is, what is Pittsburgh going to do if they sustain another injury on the back end, because obviously not having Christopher Letang is a big problem, and everybody knows how physical Washington is, and you got to think they're going to target whether it's Schmidt, or sorry, whether it's Olli Maatta, or whether it's Justin Schultz.
I made the same mistake yesterday. I did the exact same thing. I said Schmidt instead
of
Schultz.
Yeah, but no, it's going to be they're going to target one of the either both or one of those two guys, and that if one of those two guys goes down, that's really problematic for Pittsburgh. So it'll be interesting. We'll get a pretty good idea the lay of the land here the first game or so, just to see where Washington's headspace is.
7:30 tonight. A lot of us wish it was 8 o'clock, of course, because the Rangers and Senators start at 7. Very briefly, how do you see that series?
I think the Rangers have a little bit of a head up on Ottawa, but not by much. They're obviously going to have a plan for Carlson, who's just been so good. If Hank plays the same way he played against Montreal, that's going to be a problem for Ottawa. And if Ottawa can get the stretch game going, that's going to be a problem for the Rangers, but I think the Rangers will be ready for that. And so then I think that becomes a problem for Ottawa.
Thanks as always, Pierre. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5:05. We're leaving with Pierre's chat after the game with P.K. Subban. Have a great night.
Thanks a lot, Mitch.
All right, how deep did you have to dig there? Because you had to overcome a lot in that game, P.K.
Yeah, we did, but you know what? It takes composure. Today, a great team came back on us, showed us their true colors. They got a lot of fight in that locker room, and we got a character guy like Fitz put that winner in, and that's a big win for us. We got home ice now, but, you know, that's a great team over there. You got to give them credit. They played hard, and they battled just as hard as we thought they would.
P.K., what about dealing with the Fiala situation and how that potentially could have affected your bench?
That's tough, you know. It's beyond the game. It's a young kid. You don't want to see him get taken off on a stretcher like that. I've been in that position before. It's not fun. And for family and friends of his that are watching, I think he's going to be okay, and we hope that he's going to be okay. But we tried to rally around that and give our best effort today.
You talked about learning from the Chicago series. You really never faced adversity until Game 3 when you were down 2-0 in Game 3. What did you learn from that experience that helped you here tonight?
Well, I think it shows a reflection of our leadership group. I mean, we talk about leadership in this league, and leadership's not being the guy standing up and talking in the room all the time or, you know, shooting your mouth off. Leadership is grabbing the guys and bringing them together and letting them know that, hey, we are what we think we are. And if we think we're a championship team, in those moments, we got to show it. And so far we have, but we got a long way to go. And like I said, I mean, this is not about, you know, giving bulletin board material. That's a great team. Statistically, they're the best team in the second half of the season since that coaching change, and we know that right now this is the toughest hockey of our career so far, so we just got to get prepared for game 2.
Well said, and thanks for doing this, PK.
It's true. You know what else is true? It's true that you get better looking every day. I mean, Jesus, Pierre, what are you doing? What's the secret?